A triple play in this economy? Yes, welcome on into First Pitch, your home for news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball and what happened in a packed day of action on Tuesday. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, amazing day of games yesterday. Loaded slate, tons of stuff to get to. I want to start with the last game of the night, however. San Diego Padres taking on the Los Angeles Dodgers. They enter the night three games back with a three-game series against the Dodgers. So obviously, a Padres sweep means that they can make this divisional race close again. Closer Robert Suarez, 34 saves on the year, up in the ninth inning, gives up three hits, one run scores, making it a 4-2 ball game. The bases are loaded here with Miguel Rojas up to bat, Shohei Ohtani on deck, and this happens.
Rojas on the ground to third. Machado touches third, fires to second. Out at first! Oh my goodness! It's a triple play! It ends the ballgame! The San Diego Padres have clinched their spot in the postseason after a magical 2024 campaign. Will this finally be the year for the faithful?
I want Orsillo to speak my eulogy. I just want that to be said. My God.
That dude is the best commentator in baseball. I did not used to think that way, but just the energy he puts into everything is great. But triple play to end the game. According to Elias Sports Bureau, as relayed by the great Sarah Langs, this is the first time that a game has ended in a triple play with that game clinching a playoff spot. So Wow. Just great stuff there. And I really, if you're on audio, go back and watch the video of this. Manny Machado, you can tell that dude was a former shortstop and a very good defensive third baseman. He fields this ball right at almost the edge of the grass and retreats to make the tag and a turn like he's turning a double play at second. You know, great throw to second. The Dodgers challenge, because why not? Every single one of these is upheld. They weren't even close. It's just, it was amazing, and it was tons of fun to watch. I've got to ask, just given the momentum from this now, Padres are 9-1. They have been the best team in baseball from a record perspective since the All-Star break. Can they catch LA and win the division, or is this just the last gasp of the NL West hopes for the Padres?
I mean, it's still going to be tough. Let's not kid ourselves here. You have to sweep the Dodgers, although it was, and they needed a triple play to win this game, right? So it's going to be tough, but it's not out of the question. And you've mentioned it. The Padres have looked very good lately. 32-year-old Manny Machado is doing 25-year-old Manny Machado things at third base. I mean, he's doing some really impressive things, and which, by the way, they can you imagine if they didn't have him at third base like they had at the beginning of the season? At one point, the Padres were 50-50 on the year. So go ahead and do the math the rest of the way. I'm pretty sure that means they're what? 41 and 16.
I
mean, come on, that's crazy, right? That's insane what they've done over the last stretch of games just to get back into the race, and not only in the postseason, but battling for the NL West. As much as I keep saying that I think the Dodgers are going to finally be dethroned, I think the Dodgers will hold on just slightly. But I did mention that it was only going to be by two games or so, and it's looking like what's going to happen here. I think the Padres will just miss out on that NL West, but, man, I don't want to play them. And I think out of all the teams heading into the National League, that's the team I do not want to play in the first round in October.
Yeah, we'll probably get into that when the postseason starts, that Monday, assuming there's no games being made up. We'll get to that in a minute. But that's probably the team I want to face the least in the National League as well, just given how good the bullpen is. Joe Musgrove's been great since he came back. Dylan Cease obviously is fantastic. I mean, it's the one thing to watch for here is even if they sweep the Dodgers, it's not as easy as you would think for San Diego because they get Arizona for three to end the season with Arizona, where we'll get to this in a few minutes, but fighting for their lives while the Dodgers get to finish the season in Colorado. So they go to Colorado to face the Rockies. What is the Dodgers' strength right now? It's the offense, obviously, with those three Hall of Famers at the top of the lineup. And so I think that's the big reason why Shohei Ohtani might hit 60-60 is because he gets to finish his whole season in Colorado and at elevation there. But either way, this is going to be an incredibly close one to watch, incredibly fun one to watch. If you're up late tonight, Dylan Cease versus Jack Flaherty. It's going to be a great pitching matchup. It's probably, honestly, the pitching matchup of the day to watch.
What happens if Shohei Ohtani gets on base or up to bat? What happens last night?
Given what Shohei Ohtani's done this year, he probably hits a home run. I mean, just given what he's done this year.
It would have been a walk-off.
And wins the game for LA. Yeah. So they're probably pretty lucky they turned that triple play. Obviously, you can't count on something like that, but that was just awesome to watch. That was incredibly fun, and a lot of folks woke up to that on the East Coast this morning. Maybe you should stay up late tonight to watch that game.
Incredible.
Talking about late games, though, another later matchup, not super late, but the Astros and the Mariners last night. Astros are down 3-2, and they get some help from a former Dodger, a guy who was DFA'd a couple weeks ago.
Hayward drives one high and deep to right field, all the way back. It's gone. Jay Hay, what do you say? 4-3 Astros.
What another great call. We got to do a ranking system. In the offseason, like best home run calls. I think we have to do a whole show on that thing because, my gosh, they are some really good ones this season.
Yeah. Jason Hayward turns on a 99-mile-an-hour Logan Gilbert fastball and just obliterates it. He knew it off the bat. We all knew it off the bat. That was the winning margin for the Astros in their victory, 4-3. With the win, the Astros have now clinched the AL West for the fourth consecutive year. Before we discuss that real quick, trivia question for you. Who's the last non-Astros team to win the AL West?
Oh, God. It seems like it's been forever ago, but I'm going to say the ever so tough Oakland Athletics back when they had Matt Chapman and all that good that good squad with Bob Melvin. Is that true?
The 2020 Oakland A's was the last team to win the division. Outside of that shortened Mickey Mouse season, the last time anybody else won the division in a full season was 2016 when the Texas Rangers did it. The Houston Astros won their first one, literally won their very first AL West title in 2017. And since then, they have won 7 of the last 8, with the only exception being, again, the Mickey Mouse season of 2020.
Oakland had some really interesting teams just a few years ago. Many people forget about that, but they were a solid playoff team before they decided to completely go on to a fire sale. But what Houston has done has just been incredible. I mean, this stretch has been one of the best stretches in all of baseball, at least that I can remember. And it's becoming that narrative, Lindsay, and we continue to say it. The Houston Astros are inevitable. It means we've seen them start off with their franchise worst start since 1969 this season, and they are going into now they're winning the AL West and probably going to see them in the ALCS, and who knows, we might even see them in the World Series. But this team is inevitable, and they look really good right now. They look really hot. This pitching staff looks really good. You got guys like Kyle Tucker stepping up finally. I talked about how we don't want to see the Padres in the National League. I don't want to see the Astros. No, I don't. I don't one bit.
They do feel like the most complete team in the AL as of right now. Obviously, given the depth issues of the Yankees, given the slump of the Orioles, and the Guardians, who we'll get to them in a minute. I got to ask this, though. Okay, so the Astros go from 10 games back of the Mariners to winning the division with five games left to play. Seattle is now 2.5 back in the wild card. We have some AL wild card discussion later, but I do want to ask, do you think the Mariners could potentially get a wild card spot in the AL, or is it going to be among the teams that among the top four teams in the wild card?
Yeah, they're two games behind now the Kansas City Royals for that final spot, and with only four games to go now,
four and a half,
even worse. So they would have to win out and then get a little bit of love up top, which is not unlikely. Kansas City finally getting out of their losing ways, which I know we're going to discuss here later on. But if I had to pick, I'd say that Seattle's just going to miss out this season. And Jerry DePoto's good old winning numbers are just not going to be enough for him.
Yeah. The 54% comment, winning percentage of 540. They're at 513 right now. So, I've talked about this.
540 would have done some great things for him this year. 540 would have put them right in the division lead. Houston's at 544.
Yep, it's if you shoot for 540, if you get 540, you're going to be good. And he had a point in that conversation. We've talked about it before. He had a point. He just delivered it terribly, and that's kind of
terribly.
I don't understand how so many baseball executives seem to just not be able to read the room that well. We talked about Chris Getz a lot recently, but that's definitely one that stood out to a lot of people. All right, moving to the National League wild card, we saw some really interesting movement. In the wild card, you had the Diamondbacks taking on the Giants, but before that, you had the Braves taking on the Mets. Braves go on to win 5-1, not necessarily even as close as the score makes it sound. Luis Severino, the de facto ace for New York, they move the rotation around to get him in game one. He goes only 4 innings, 4 runs allowed on 7 hits, 1 walk to 5 strikeouts. Spencer Schwellenbach, however, the rookie for Atlanta, goes 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run. He gives up a homer in the 7th to Mark Vientos. That is the first earned run he gave up to New York in 14 innings on the season. And to kind of illustrate how great Spencer Schwellenbach has been for these Atlanta Braves, he's made 7 starts against the best teams in the NL this year. The Phillies, the Dodgers, the Padres, the Mets, and the Brewers. I'm sorry. Phillies, Dodgers, Padres, and Mets. He's not faced the Brewers or Diamondbacks. But in those 7 starts versus the 4 teams there, 1.79 ERA.
Wow.
Michael Harris, 3 hits, a single, an RBI double, a home run. Also makes a great diving catch in first base. The Braves are now... They have made this as close as they can. They're half a game back of Arizona, 1 game back of New York. They've got obviously 2 more against the Mets this week. And then the flip side is Arizona took on the Giants and got blasted 11-0. They give up 5 homers. Brandon Fott allows 5 runs, 4 earned in 2 2/3 innings. Right now, given what happened here, do you have Mets Braves in the postseason? What are the two teams of these three that you see making the postseason?
Yeah, you're going to have to say it's Mets Braves. I think that we're going to see the last hope for the Diamondbacks today. And the reason I say that is because Zach Gallen is on the mound. If you've already had all these questions about the pitching rotation, Lindsay, with Eduardo Rodriguez, he's messing up at the beginning of this series. Then Brandon Path didn't look good. If Zach Gallen, comes out and craps the bed in this series and the Giants sweep and play spoiler against the Diamondbacks, then I think it's time that you stick the fork in the Diamondbacks, even though they're only going to be down a game. But outside the postseason, I don't think you're going to be able to catch either the Mets or the Braves, regardless, even though they're playing against each other. I know the Mets have the Brewers later on, and the Braves still have the Royals. Both teams are playoff contending teams. But I can't be confident whatsoever in this pitching staff. I'm not, but I'm on the final string of hope for if Zach Gallen can at least do something. But if he does bad against this team and the Giants are looking good. They're at 500 now. Can you believe it? They popped up to 500. I believe that's the first time since August 6th that they're back until 500. So, yeah, I'm very concerned if I'm a Diamondback fan heading into this one.
Yeah. Braves and Mets fans, a little bit of concern as well on the injury front. Austin Riley is officially not going to come back this year. He got an MRI. The broken Hammett bone is not healing fast enough for him to take part in the postseason. The unspoken part of that when they talked to manager Brian Snitker was, if the Braves make the World Series, right? Like, is he going to be able to come back then? But the general message yesterday was he's not going to be able to come back. Francisco Lindor talked to the media, and he can't seem to get to the point where he can get on the field yet. He's missed seven straight games now. Luis Angel Acuna is playing okay in his absence, but obviously losing their MVP is not great at this time of year. But this whole Braves-Mets series, this reminds me of 2022. Mets were leading the division for a good portion of the year, and the Braves were trying to chase them down. The Braves, I think, got as far as 10 and a half games back at the start of June. And New York comes in the next to last series of the year, comes into Atlanta. They set their rotation up. They have DeGrom, Scherzer, and Bassett going in those three games against the Braves. They get swept. And just like this series, they just don't really seem to show up. They get dominated. And I don't know what it is about this Mets team, but Mets fans on the internet last night were the saddest they have been all year. They were down. They were convinced that this team is cooked. They just can't handle the spotlight, and they can't do it against Atlanta. And I don't quite know exactly what's going to happen the rest of this series. There are flood warnings in Atlanta the next 2 days. They're expected to get something like 5 or 6 inches of rain across the next 2 days because there's the bands ahead of a hurricane coming through. In retrospect, you should have played a doubleheader on Tuesday, and you should have moved Wednesday up to an early start to try to get these three games in. MLB has not announced what the plan will be. I assume they'd make these teams come back on Monday and play a game. If you have to make up two games, I don't think they'd make them play a doubleheader on Monday and then turn around and do postseason play on Tuesday, but who knows? So we'll see what happens. But either way, a little bit of a shakeup here in the wild card, and it's an interesting place to be right now.
Francisco Lindor's injury kind of gives me Christian Yelich vibes, where he's talking about his back and how he's saying that he will have pain for the rest of the season. And then because Yelich did that at one point, and then a week later, we find out that he's done for the year because he's getting surgery. Now, I don't think we'll get any kind of reports like that until the Mets are officially out of it. But Lindor, that gives me those vibes and makes me wonder if he's going to come back at all this regular season. And if he does, what will we get from him? Will he be 100%? Will he even be remotely what the Mets need out of that lineup?
I think he said he wouldn't be 100%. He'd be playing through pain. The question is just, the question is just what percentage would he be and how much pain would he have to deal with on a day-to-day basis? So he's not going to be 100% when he comes back. That's for sure. The question is just going to be, how long does it take and what form do you get him back in? And I think that's scary news if you're the Mets and you're trying to hold on. There is, if Arizona stops slumping, there is a scenario where the Mets could be out of the postseason as well. If the Brewers are pushing to get one of those two buys, Arizona gets hot, the Braves get hot, and the Mets collapse, they could be out, which would be, I'm not going to call it a generational collapse. We've seen generational collapses before, but that would be a shock. So it doesn't feel like it's going to happen, but just heads up. Everything could break the right way for that.
The next series and the one that's happening right now for all three of these teams are going to be wild. We've mentioned, obviously, the Braves-Mets series going on right now and the Giants-Diamondbacks, but D-backs-Padres, I mean, that's going to dictate a lot of things heading into the end of the year. And then what we mentioned with the Brewers and the Mets and the Royals and the Braves. The weather thing is crazy, and it's wild. And tonight we're getting two possible hurricanes hitting Atlanta. You got the one, the natural disaster, and then Hurricane Sale as well. So we'll see what happens with the rest of the series. But I will say that this Atlanta Braves team right now, the way their offense is shaking, the way their pitching staff has looked, they're one of those teams. They look like the team we all expected all year long when experts and media sites were predicting them to win 100 games, this is what they expected to see. And even though Ronald Acuña Jr. is not in the lineup, it doesn't matter. They're really making it work. And it's got to be scary for those other teams knowing that the Braves are getting hot at the right time.
Yeah. Winning percentage of 650 in, since I think it's early August. So this is the final of the Braves team we thought we were going to see all year. All right, jump into the quick pitch real quick. Baltimore Orioles and New York Yankees are in a series right now. Orioles won 5-3, punched their ticket to the postseason. So they are at the very worst. They are guaranteed a wild card spot. But you saw some movement here. They activated Ryan Mountcastle to make room for him. They optioned down Eloy Jimenez. They also, after DFAing him, officially released Craig Kimbrell. Is the second half swoon of the Orioles, where I believe they are 23-26 since the trade deadline, is this is them losing the division and this losing record since the deadline directly correlated to their refusal to move meaningful prospects for good players versus just getting reclamation projects and guys like Eloy Jimenez and Trevor Rogers?
Yeah, and what's crazy is Michael Elias finally made moves, right? Like, that hasn't happened in years past at all, even when they went for 101 wins last season. They finally made some moves to try and bolster their team this season, moving a guy like Connor Norby and moving a guy like Kyle Stowers to Miami. Yeah, some interesting pieces that were moved. And most organizations, those are the top of the prospect list, but they're kind of, you know, just mid to high tier for the Orioles organization. I think this is going to make it to him take a step back moving into 2025 and say, okay, maybe I shouldn't move these guys even more because it didn't work out. You got a guy like Rogers who's optioned down to AAA. Jimenez gets optioned down to AAA. Sir Anthony Dominguez has not done good for the Orioles, even though he's becoming their new closer after Kimbrel's being released. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of issues that have happened with their trade deadline, and it might make the front office of the Orioles even more scared to do something next season. So I think this is the worst case scenario for an Orioles fan. If you wanted them, have them, you know, compete and contend and make some moves if they're contenders next season, because I don't know if you're going to get that from a guy like Mike Elias. He might get gun shy.
Yeah. Which is just a shame because they had so much potential here and they kind of ruined it because they had such good. Can you imagine if they had added Jazz Chisholm? Can you imagine what putting Jack, because they could have outbid the Yankees for, they could have outbid anybody for any player they wanted, but adding Jazz Chisholm for multiple seasons to this team would have absolutely given Baltimore a more explosive offense and more defensive options because Jazz has played center field. He's played second. He's played third. Like it blows my mind how they just took half measures in reclamation projects versus going out and seizing the competitive window now, because like, look at the Braves. They might not make the postseason. And we all thought they were a postseason lock for the next decade with their core. You never know when the window is going to close early. You have to take advantage.
Jazz Chisholm would have been a crazy addition. If you think about how he would have filled the needs, because Jordan Westberg was hurt right around the trade deadline. So he could have played second, and then Westbrook's coming back, and they could have moved him out the center field because Cedric Mullins is struggling. So Jazz Chisholm Jr. would have fit this Orioles team perfectly.
No idea why they didn't do something like that. All right. Speaking of the wild card, they are the number one seed in the wild card, but behind them, the Tigers and the Royals, both teams win yesterday. And, you know, for the Royals, finally, right? They had lost 7 consecutive games. They take down in 10 innings. They take down the Nationals 1-0. It was the first time they had scored runs in multiple games. I think they were on like 17 innings or 20 something innings of not having scored a run.
Cue that little Giants meme. They gained a yard. So they got a run.
While the Tigers continued being incredibly hot. You know, they go out, they beat the Rays 2-1. Tariq Skubal is just dominant again. Ryan, you know, they hit the fastball of Ryan Pepiot really well. And so at the same time, you see a little bit of, obviously, the Mariners lost. We already covered that. The Twins lost 4-1 to the Marlins. We now have a little bit of space. The Tigers and the Royals tied for the final wild card spot. Minnesota 2 games back. Seattle 2.5 games back. Does Minnesota have a chance at climbing back into this, or are we stuck a fork in them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only team they're going to be able to catch is the Royals, and that all depends on how hard the Braves have to fight in that last weekend as well, just based on schedules. Who's the Twins play the final weekend? They go against the Orioles, which they're kind of already set in their ways, so that might actually work in their favor. But yeah, I think that's the only way, because when you look at this Detroit Tigers team, I mean, first of all, how fun is it to see Tarek Skubal play meaningful baseball at the end of September?
So
I mean,
glad they didn't trade him.
He is so good. And I'm so happy, actually, for the Tigers that they did not trade him at the deadline. Because, you know, at first, at the deadline, I was kind of hoping he'd move because I wanted to see him in a contender this year and see what happens. But watching him contend for the team that he's been with for all these seasons and build up this Detroit squad that I thought had the talent to do so in the last couple seasons, but they've faltered in their ways. I think that's even more exciting. And this is a team that not only can make the postseason, Lindsay, but I think that they can upset in a series. Like, I would not be shocked to see the Tigers not only make the postseason, but contend against either the Yankees or the Guardians in the ALDS.
Yeah, I can see them going pretty far. Talking about a team that's not going to go that far, Chicago White Sox ride an eighth inning rally to come back and beat the Angels 3-2. They are still tied with the 62 Mets at 120 losses. They do not set the record with 121. And I'm trying to find the stat, but I believe this is the first time this season that they have come back from a deficit in the eighth inning or later to win a game, which is just amazing here, right? Like, I can't believe that's where we are, but they come back and they do it. At the same time, their Double-A affiliate, the Birmingham Barons, swept the Southern League Championship. They swept the Montgomery Biscuits. And so the Double-A team wins a Southern League Championship. At the same time, the Major League team is one of the worst teams in baseball history. Don't really have any analysis here. I just thought it was fun to mention real quick.
So what do you think? What do you think could win a game? The Chicago White Sox or the Birmingham Barons in a 3-game series? That's the real question, right? No, the biggest thing here, I think, from this game is not only is the comeback and they still are holding the record, but congratulations to Victoria, who was married. Who was not married, but asked to be married.
Proposed to
at the White Sox game. So not only does
on the video board,
not only do they get to remember their magical moment in the with the worst team in baseball history, at least they got a win out of it. One of their only small wins of the season. Can't believe
they got a win. They got a win out of it. That was great. We mentioned the Guardians earlier, just kind of briefly. They secured a first round bye with their 6-1 win over the Reds. And apparently there is a competition between the Reds and the Guardians. I think they call it the City Cup. It's a trophy and everything for these two teams that they play for, because they're obviously both in the same state. And so the Guardians celebrated with shirts in the clubhouse that said Cincinnati is in Kentucky. I just thought that was hilarious. Ton of fans are going to want to buy those, obviously. I want to wrap real quick on the Pittsburgh Pirates. They lost to the Brewers 7-2. They're now 73-84. They bought at the deadline and have been atrocious since then. But that wasn't the big news from yesterday. They DFA'd some players. Michael A. Taylor, who has struggled this year, one of his career worst years, and Rowdy Tellez. And the Tellez DFA got some attention because he has an incentive in his contract. He was 4 plate appearances away from a $200,000 bonus when he got DFA'd. How do we feel about a team DFAing a veteran in the final week of the season to avoid having to pay him a bonus that he's earned?
I mean, how can you like it, right? And you can't even say it's a good business decision, because it's not. And I'll elaborate a little bit. 4 plate appearances to get 200,000 extra bonus. Sure, that's all, you know, that would have been great for Tellez. And obviously, I'm sure the Pirates don't want to pay that. But if he would have got the 425 plate appearances, he would have got that bonus. And he's going to be a pending free agent. I understand why they made the decision. Don't agree with it, but understand why they did it. Why I don't agree with it, Lindsay, is because What veteran and what right mind will a veteran want to sign with this team on a prove it deal, which the Pirates need to have players like that in their small market economy and just the way the roster is constructed and what Bob Nutting has just done, period, in the last decade or so. What veteran on a prove it deal is going to want to sign that, knowing with incentives like this, knowing that they could just get cut before those incentives hit? So I think this has done a lot more damage than good. I think they're going to wind up actually losing more value than their $200,000 they just saved. And you're doing that when you're starting to establish a young core, especially with that pitching staff like Paul Skeens, Jared Jones, et cetera. And now you're at a point to where you might ruin that pitching core yet again. And I think we already knew that might come. I mean, look at Garrett Cole, look at Tyler Glasnow in the past. Now we might see it again. And we may be able to pinpoint it down to small things like this. So yeah, not good, not good at all.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing you said there was right, is it's going to cost them more money in the long run on having to pay extra in free agency for guys, both in free agency and when they extend their own guys. If I'm Paul Skeens and I'm discussing a contract extension with the Pirates, I refuse to take any sort of performance-based incentives. And you can't put an incentive in there for something like strikeouts or whatever. You can't do that. But you can do appearances, innings pitched, and all of that. And I'm going to insist that they just give us more money. Yep, they give me more guaranteed money. It's an odd penny-pinching thing that we've seen from the Pirates now for a long time. The only time that they have really flexed the financial muscle of Bob Nutting, who is a billionaire, he is worth $1.1 billion, was the 2011 draft. They spent, I think it was like $17 million. I want to say this was $5 or $6 million more than anybody had spent in a previous draft to go out and get a ton of talent. Garrett Cole, number one overall. They got Josh Bell in the second round. They got Tyler Glasnow in the fifth. Clay Holmes in the ninth. Like, they really went out of pocket to sign a ton of dudes. They drafted Trey Turner in the 20th. He didn't sign, but they just to go get a ton of guys. The very next year, MLB put in draft pools because of what they did. And ever since then, they've been just incredibly cheap all of the time. And I think that this is one of the things that fans complain about the most. And this ultimately is one of the biggest problems in baseball, is the fact that you have owners like Bob Nutting, you have owners like Fisher that just refuse to spend money, and they see the team as a profit generation source first and second and third before they work on building a competitive team and roster. And that's just, that can't be the way, like, this game will never be as great as it can be until you fix that. And I don't know how anybody other than the league fixes that.
Yep, 100%. And I feel for you Pittsburgh fans, because you guys deserve more than what you guys are getting on the field. And Paul Skeens, guys like Paul Skeens, I want to see him in the postseason. I don't want to see him getting traded to another team. Mike Trout version. Like, I don't want to see that. He's going to have to go to a different team.
Trout at least got paid. I'd say the Ohtani thing is have one of the best players in baseball, never see the postseason with him, and then he walks in free agency. That's the Ohtani thing right there.
Right. And that's probably what's going to happen to Skeens if he doesn't get traded. And what has happened from the last couple pitchers for the Pirates with Cole, with Glasnow, as you mentioned, they've all had the move because they
didn't Archer
contract. Yeah, exactly. Chris Archer too. Yeah. What a trade that was. You could already read the writing on the wall, and it starts with little things like this. If you can't get the little things right, what makes you think you're going to be able to get the large things right? And that's exactly what we see with this organization, with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Exactly. This has been First Pitch for Wednesday, September 25th. If you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell so you know when we drop a new show. If you're listening on audio, leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends. Even if they don't like baseball, tell your friends. It's a fun show to come listen to, and they can hear some great calls. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.